This is CliffCentral.com. 360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
It is 360Biz.com. My name is Debohoma Fodi. Welcome to another exciting installment of 360 Biz. It is a beautiful Wednesday evening. You know, this is a show that brings you subject matter experts, regulators, industry champions, and a whole lot of other exciting business. You know, we're talking all things business every Wednesday without fail. If ever you want to catch on some of our exciting shows that we've had, you can always go to www.cliffcentral.com and go to podcast to actually listen to some of the shows, or you can definitely download the Cliff Central app. We also, on social media, you can always follow at cliffcentral.com. And you phone us away on Twitter, on our page, it's on Facebook, it's at Cliff Central as well. If you want to follow me, it's at Debohoma 40 everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, and it's Debohoma 40 on Facebook. I'm very excited about the discussion that we're having today, because mining in South Africa was once of the main driving force behind the history and development of Africa's most advanced and richest economy. I mean, large-scale and profitable mining started with the discovery of a diamond on the banks of Orange River in 1867 by Erasmus Jacob. I know we've got Erasmus as well, and so they're going to tell, maybe they are linked to this diamond, we don't know. And the subsequent discovery and exploration of Kimberley pipes a few years later. I mean, within South Africa's economy built on gold and diamond mining, the sector is an important foreign exchange earner, with gold accounting for more than one-third of exports. In 2009, the country's diamond industry was the fourth largest in the world. South Africa is also a major producer of coal, manganese, and chrome. I mean, there's also a considerable potential for the discovery of other world-class deposits in areas yet to be exclusively explored. It's something that always affects me to say, how is it that as Africa or as South Africa we mine so much, but yet we don't want that get to enjoy the benefits? South African prolific mineral reserves include precious metals, minerals, energy minerals, non-ferrous metals, minerals, ferrous, and industrial minerals. I mean, given in history and mineral wealth, it is no surprise that the country's mining companies are key players in the global industry, not forgetting profitable to some of them. Its strength includes a high level of technical and production expertise and comprehensive research and development activities in a democratic South Africa, where we are still in the process of addressing the ills of the past that have to do with race and ethnicity. We tend to neglect other issues relating to transformation. Hence, I'm excited about today's show that we're going to be discussing about some of these issues. But more often than not, we talk about transformation, we seem to think it only refers to issues of skin color. Transformation is a multifaceted. Yes, we cannot run away from the skin colors debate. It will also be there whether we like it or not. That's why today I've got a mixture of that. The only people missing here are Indians and Chinese, but I've got a mixture of that industry. I mean, for the mining industry, transformation is not only for the regulation purposes. It is a business requirement that the industry needs to adhere to, for it operates seamlessly. Mining has not only been viewed as the sexiest industry in the past, but it has one of the vehicles used to entrench divisions amongst people. The industry itself became the complete example of discrimination in South Africa. I'm excited that we today I've got women that are going to be speaking about that industry that was previously discriminated. That makes the transformation journey a bit more intense for the industry, especially with the broader South African society still being on the same journey itself. To talk to us this afternoon about transformation in mining, we have the honor of welcoming our incredible guest in studio, Miss Marita Erasmus, like I've said, who's the co-founder and the chief executive officer of MTS Holding. MTS is South Africa's leading expert on social responsibility in the mining industry and the exclusive reseller of Insight, a cloud-based social sustainability management platform in sub-Saharan Africa. We've got Ms. Noluthando Zulu, who's a senior analyst for resource and asset management, and senior analyst for resources at an asset management company. I mean, the asset management company she works for It's one of the largest asset management companies on the continent of Africa. Nolutando works in the resources team, where she analyzes mining companies listed on the JSE and invests on behalf of its clients. She's incredible. She's currently doing her master's in mining engineering at the University of Witwatersrand. Beauty with brains, I see. We've got a man that I respect and that I honor, who's Moses Cheche. I had an honor to speaking to a friend yesterday that apparently was having a discussion with you, so that you're coming on to my show. He is the founder and the managing editor of two magazines, Mining CSI and Success SA Publication. My publication, elected board member of Waterbeck Development Agency. He worked with the president of ANC, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, at the Shanduka Group as a transformation manager at Shanduka Coal Mine, focusing on the mining rights, local economic development, corporate social investment project, and social labor. He is the managing editor of Mining CSI. Let me take this opportunity to welcome our guest and get right to the discussions of today. How are you, ladies and gents?
Sanbonani.
Thank you for welcoming us.
No, definitely. Maybe let me start with you, Marita. Please just quickly introduce us yourself. Tell us who you are and what is it that you do.
Thank you, Tebogo. My name is, as was introduced, my name is Marita. I'm the co-founding member and CEO of Managing Transformation Solutions. Our approach towards transformation within the mining sector has always been one of, it's a business imperative. You know, transformation within the sector cannot be at arm's length from the business plan within a mine. It's got to be part of the DNA and the decision making within the business itself, the DNA within the business itself.
Okay.
So often social and labor plans, which is one of the tools for transformation within the mining sector, is seen as a document that is possibly owned by HR or a mid-management type of person that really have got a coordinating function rather than a strategic and decision-making function. So we've always approached the transformation process within mining from a business perspective and understanding it's got to be part of the DNA of your organization in order to be successful. And our business then have grown within mining industry over the years in terms of the advice and the products that we provide to industry to help them make better decisions and have impactful transformation strategies on the mine that will actually make a difference to the mine and the communities.
Okay. You've said a mouthful, but let's simplify it. What is the role of MTS when it comes to the mining industry at large?
We've got three roles, or three basic objectives that is reflected within our business.
Okay.
The one is advice, strategic advice to mining industry, whether it is on executive level or whether we are with our hands in the community busy with relocation aspects or community development. Mm-hmm. So we go across the board from executive right through to within the communities.
Okay.
Secondly, we've got a IT product, a cloud-based IT product that assists our clients to give them information that they need in order to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
This product, again, goes across the board from executive right through to possibly the payroll officer or the person making the recruitment decisions.
Okay.
To teach them, to connect them between what is the mine's legacy statement of we will recruit locally to understanding they are currently recruiting 10% or 15% or 30% locally, because there often is a disconnect between the policy statement and the decision that the recruitment officer make. You know, so we connect that through technology.
Okay. No, I love what you've said. Maybe before I actually go further, let me come to Moses. Moses, do you want to tell us perhaps what is mining CSI? Quickly, before we get into the detail outside, maybe what I've said in my introduction.
Thanks, Tebogo. Just to correct, you made an error. You say Moses Matera, I'm Moses Sibiya.
Sibiya?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, sorry, man. My script is written Matera. Sorry, man.
No. Yeah? That is fine. Okay. And thanks, Tebogo, for inviting us. Mining CSI is a magazine that was developed some years back.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work for Aquarius Platinum Mine, where we build houses in the Rustenburg area. My job was to do transformation and make sure that the mines nowadays, since with the new government, they cannot just operate as usual.
Okay.
Like you do have the dumps all over where people have been affected with black holes and the Kimberley and all of that. So now the mines must be responsible. They must make sure that the community within they operate are taken care of. While I was working at the mine, at Aquarius, we build houses. At that time, Minister Sonjika came to see some of the project, and she said, hey, listen, you guys are doing a great job. And then that's when current Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa was going to venture with Glencore when Shanduka Coal was started. And then they were so impressed with our work, and they said, listen, we'd like you to come and assist us in Middleburg. And then also with the recession at that time, we flagged the magazine a bit. But after that, the mines were more interested, said, listen, this is helping us to communicate the issues with the community.
Mm.
Why don't you restart it again?
Okay.
And then while I was working at Shanduka, and then in 2012, when the deputy president went to politics,
mm-hmm.
I also decided, hey, I think I can restart the magazine again. And he said, what do you want? So we just need support, take an advert. And then he signed a check of 400,000 rand as Shanduka to say, listen, start the magazine.
Oh, nice.
But the idea is that the magazine is actually communicating the projects that are done by the mines.
Mm.
We partners with the Chamber of Mines. We partners with Mining Indaba on an annual basis.
Also, you know Mike Teke.
Yeah, we're very good buddies. Actually, I'm seeing him next week in Cape Town.
Oh, that's my brother. He's my mentor. We all come from the East.
You are kidding me. Wow.
Yes, yeah. Even the school that he sponsors in Guatemala.
Yeah.
I'm always there doing the renovations of that school or even doing talks. And
no, great. Please do invite us next time. We can also feature some of those projects.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
So in the nutshell, we showcasing those projects, but we now busy discussing with the current new government leadership,
mm-hmm.
where they just last week I was in Beggarsford, where there's so much development, but there's just haphazardness. You know, there is no coordinations. The mines have got a lot of money, which some of them they say we can't spend because of problems with the chiefs, communities, and things like that. So we're going to assist with that.
Mm.
The opportunities are massive. The money is there. It's just a matter of how do you make sure that the communities can benefit, the municipality can able to
okay.
do their IDPs.
Okay, maybe Mr. Sibiya, you said the opportunities are massive. The money is there.
Yeah.
Where is it though? Because right now, I'll make an example. There's somebody that is listening, ordinary person on the street. Do you understand? So not everyone is as fortunate that I know you, I know other people. Do you understand? That we could actually have this discussion. But for somebody on the street, where do they get those opportunities? How do they go about finding them?
The new government, they have put together the so-called mining charter.
Mm-hmm.
The mining charter now makes companies to have a social and labor plan budget for 5-year cycle. Every year.
Mm.
Just to give you a simple example, one either on this magazine, the last issue, Anglo Gold Ashanti alone, they budget 418 million rand for social and labor plan for any 5-year period. If you were to look at how much that money is actually calculated, they have money for SMME development, they have money for housing, they have money for all sorts of skills development and all of that. But that can only be able, even youth development, that can only be able to be utilized properly if they work together with the municipalities. And that has been most of the problems where municipalities or local government, they don't understand how the mines work. And hence the mines, before when I was at Shanduka or even at Aquarius, mines used to give money to municipalities, say, okay, do what you have to do as part of our social
plan.
But that money was abused or misused because they just didn't know how to use it. So now the mines, they said, for instance, they're giving a lot of money in terms of bursaries. We're talking millions, but that is not told about. And then just to give you a simple example, one mine built 74 million rand state-of-the-art school. Community went to Toitoi the following week. And then they say, but we've just built that. And then the community said, no, it was built by the Department of Education.
Mm.
So you can imagine the mine say, well, we spend 78 million rand, and then no one understand what we'd. So the money is there. It's just a matter of how do you coordinate? How do you work with the mines to spend those monies? Some of them, they don't even able to spend those kinds of monies because there is just disjuncture between municipalities, communities, the chiefs, and the whole lot of various other issues. So this a serious need to understand how the money can be utilized because it is there.
Mm.
Every mine budgets for that money for 5 years.
Hmm. Hi. Let me come to Noltando. Mamzula.
Yebo.
As a female black mining professional, how has it been? Hasn't it been hard? I'm looking at you. You're all made up, looking all good. And you are in mining.
I swapped gumboots for high heels.
Oh, is it? Yes. Oh, okay.
So just to give you some context, I used to work in the mining industry. I'm a qualified geologist. Mm-hmm. I got my honours degree and went on to work at Harmony Gold and then at Royal Bafokeng Platinum.
Mm.
And was able to be exposed to both open pit experience and underground experience. I spent the bulk of my career actually working underground. And I started to see transformation at university already. When I looked at the years, at the people who were in the classes ahead of us,
mm-hmm.
you could just see the number of black female students growing. In my honors year in 2011, there was 11 black there was 11 females in my class, and there mm-hmm. was 4 males.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit of a disconnect when I moved to the industry itself and saw that, oh, actually.
What were you doing at Royal Bafokeng?
So I worked as an underground production geologist.
Okay.
So obviously I would go underground and on a daily basis
mm-hmm.
In the certain section which I was working in, and I would assist with regards to the mapping and the allocation of reef mm. and of course identifying structures, and then working with rock engineering to put means in place
mm.
to make the area a working safe area. So that was my duties at Royal Bafokeng Platinum, and it was quite of a big disconnect walking out of a class of 11 females into mm. a workplace where you're the only black female. But that was a new experience, but I must say, it was difficult, especially when you walk in and everyone is Yakwabas and Vickers,
mm.
and you are Nulutando, and mm. they say, do you have another name? No, it's Nulutando. Mm. and then going underground and being exposed to people who say to you, you can't tell me anything, I've been mining for 25 years and you're 20.
I know those ones. Maybe let me ask you this. Yeah. According to you, do you think the mining industry is transforming?
At certain levels, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this discussion actually quite early on, is that you're starting to see, and with regards to the MPRDA and the mining charter, especially with ownership,
mm-hmm.
there's a 26% ownership mandate that's been put to the mining industry. Mm-hmm. And you are definitely starting to see black females coming into the mining industry, black males coming into the mining industry.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very slowly, we are starting to take on management positions.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, however, you know, companies go out there and they pride themselves in the fact that we have a 26% black ownership, but you have a general manager that's a white male, a production manager, section manager, and all the mine overseers are white males. And you have these young black, you know, people working in the mining industry asking for an opportunity. So we cannot say we are transformed when we are black owned but white managed.
Okay, you're disturbing me. A friend of mine just walked in who happens to be a colleague as well, Leanne. And Leanne, come say hi to our attendees. Tell us who you are and what is that you do, quickly.
Hi to all of your listeners. My name is Leanne Friedman, and I am basically a BEE consultant. So our job is to help our clients, who are predominantly the larger corporates, basically comply with the legislation and also facilitate some enterprise and supplier development funding to a lot of small black-owned businesses. And when I say small, I'm talking about a business that has a turnover of less than 50 million rand per annum, and black-owned is genuine black ownership, where there's black management as well, but of course more than 51% black ownership.
Okay, the reason I'm bringing you in, by the way, she's the CEO of Econosev. Yes. Yeah. So tell me, we Nolisana just raised an important issue. Maybe let me ask you, in your client base, do you work with any mining companies? One, and do you see transformation? Because you're in the transformation space as far as mining is concerned.
We actually, I can think of one just off the top of my head, who is actually a mining supplies company. So they supply into the mine. And I don't want to mention any names right mm-hmm. now, but I think your point is actually very valid, because they do have their black shareholding. And I'm thinking of one in particular. They've got their black shareholding. They are trying to transform around the entire rest of the scorecard. But of course, management is still a challenge.
Yes.
And when I talk about management, it's not only your senior managers, but it's your middle managers, junior managers, yes. semi-skilled, unskilled. And of course, that's where we try and link as close as possible to skills development.
Absolutely.
Because skills development should transform over time to actually make those changes. So my philosophy is transform your unskilled to become semi-skilled, your semi-skilled to become junior becomes middle yes. becomes senior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sustainable way to actually do transformation. But just bringing it back to the point is we do work with some clients who mainly supply into the mining industry.
Not the actual mining company.
Not the actual big Royal Buffer Kings that you're talking about over here. But the one that I'm thinking of particularly is actually trying to put together a really clear and sustainable plan on enterprise and supply development. So it's actually, I suppose, quite fitting. I'm going to maybe speak to them and see if they're prepared to come live on air and, you know, see if there's any suppliers that they can work with.
Yeah, no, definitely.
As
I think
some
let's
sort
do
of
that.
Plan. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, let's do that. And we're going to put them in contact with Mining CSI as well.
Absolutely.
So that it showcases some of the work that they do. Marita, coming to you, I mean, Leanne just raised an important issue to say upskill the unskilled people. I mean, what is your opinion on the use of technology to identify and create solutions? I mean, around problems faced by mining communities, I mean, such as poor health, lack of resources, and poor infrastructure. I mean, I think Mr. Sibiya did make mention of them right now. We've got even people in the mines that are being replaced by technology.
I think modernization within the mining industry is the next big conversation. Mm. And how can we modernize and remain socially sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cannot not modernize in order to protect low-skilled jobs within the mining sector, because we will not be able to mine competitively globally. We have to understand that we are in a global competitive space, and mm-hmm. we need to bring our resources out with globally competitive pricing. So we need a sector where our employees can be multi-skilled or upskilled through the sector.
Mm.
And we recently really started to dig into skills development within the mining industry to understand where does mining industry spend their money around skills development?
Mm.
Because a lot of money is spent around skills development. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the story of unintended consequences. Local recruitment is one of the key ways in which mining industry can have a positive impact on their local labor-sending communities.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, over the years, our schooling system in the local, rural, semi-urban, rural communities, the quality in those schools are not great, you know, and it's deteriorated over time.
Mm-hmm.
So the matriculants coming out of the rural schools often have a challenge to gain access into university to qualify for university or learnerships or apprenticeships or those career development kind of programs where you can become part of mid-management or senior management through following that career path.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the money in skills development and core mining over the last couple of years have actually been spent on core mining skills. Rather than career development skills like bursary programs. Not that there isn't money spent on bursary programs, okay. But if you had to take a bulk of the money spent and you put it in a pie chart,
mm-hmm.
you'll see the bulk of the money is spent in core mining skills. A significant volume of money is spent in adult education and training programs still, and bridging kind of programs
mm-hmm.
to give people access, you know, into learnerships or into bursary programs.
Hmm.
That then asks the question, sorry, I'm taking a long-winded answer, but the question is, have we got the skills in mining at the moment to modernize, or are we going to lose employment opportunities in the mining industry if we modernize, and what does it mean for our local communities if we need to recruit locally? Will we be in a position to recruit from local communities, upskill the people, and employ them in a modern mine?
Hmm.
You know, we have the skills available? Yeah. And I think that is a really important question.
I'd love Mr. Sibiya to come up on that question. The question that Marita has just asked.
We have to modernize. She is right. Technology is part of who we are. It's basically the fourth industrial revolution,
mm-hmm.
Which was just discussed in Davos recently on the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
The mining companies, they understand that. I mean, if you look, for instance, Johannesburg is what it is today because 100 years ago, it was just, you know, a mining company. But today is no longer dependent on mining. It's service-driven. It's different technology and all mm-hmm. of that. I was in Messina not so long ago, where the guys, the municipality, asked me. I've asked them, what do you guys want to do? They said, now with the Zimbabwe back in business,
mm-hmm.
we want to turn this town into a logistic hub. that dry port hub. Mm-hmm. What it means is that the trucks that are coming from Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, going to Durban to carry stuff, can only do that in Messina. Then they have a master plan. I said to them, the best, who's going to get them? Where are you going to get the money from? They say, we're going to try and look at government, and government doesn't have money. I say, your best natural investor is De Beers, which is Venetia Mine, just around the corner here, because that's how the mine, that town grew. You have Coal of Africa. So the people, they don't necessarily have to depend on mine anymore. With the investment that's around there and properly managed SMME development, because the mines, as I mentioned to you earlier, they do have this budget. They can make huge difference by making people do their own things, by investing in them. She has mentioned skills development. It's a priority for every single mine as far as social and labor plan is concerned.
Yeah.
If it can be managed properly, I can tell you in the next 5 to 10 years, you're looking at new big cities that the mines themselves can actually do around, especially Beaufort.
Mm-hmm.
And they already the Lephalale Wida, they're calling Lephalale as a new city post-apartheid. So the technology can play a big role, because and there's one that I just didn't mention to you. There's a company that now does a cell phone app where now they can actually identify they've been partnering with Ivanhoe Mines.
Mm-hmm.
in Limpopo, where they can able to track the community, what skills level is there, what jobs do they, what are their complaints and their things. And those kinds of apps, they actually show some very important statistics where now communities are saying, well, now, this is our skills level, this is what we have. Job creation is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the SMME development is the next. So using technology, they can tell how many people live in that area, how many are actually subscribing to. We're talking thousands of young people that they know, how they can even send their CV using the technology. And the minds, they're saying to us, instead of now trying to employ everyone because it can't be done, we can use technology to actually make projects that people can do for themselves.
Yes.
So it's a very big important issue.
Let me ask you the question that I asked Nolutando. Is there transformation in mining, according to you?
I was a transformation manager at Shanduka. At that time, I'm talking maybe about 2008 up until 2012. It was a bit slower, but now it's starting to take shape.
Mm-hmm.
Because, we're having, on the previous issue of mining CSI, you have a CEO of Vedanta, a female called Deshne Naidu. She's on that particular issue. She's actually getting women. I'm talking young black women, not even only black, but even white there. But she's starting to make sure that, listen, that mine is taking shape in terms of that. We are partners with Chamber of Mines.
Mm-hmm.
The article that you see here says just transformation not defined by tick box approach. So there is a transformation. It's slow, but I think naturally with the MPRD taking shape, although you're still having this uncertainty because it hasn't been, the mining chapter 3 hasn't actually take effect yet. I think the mines have actually make a headway. Roger Baxter, the CEO, we have a very good relationship. He's forever saying, listen, we're trying to make the best that we can. But, and you must, when you have time, please read on his foreword on this issue.
It's no, I'm definitely going to read it, issue.
Yeah. So the Chamber of Mines is making huge road ahead there. And we also having good relationship with the DMR ministry,
mm-hmm.
where we're continuously talking to the deputy minister, especially Godfrey Olifant. They are supporting that in a big way, because for them, it's a matter of regulations, but also at the same time, they're actually trying to make sure that the rules are followed. So there is a dent starting to come true, you know. And hopefully in the next couple of years, you know, we'll try and level the playing field as well as transformation.
Leanne, can you quickly give us tips or to mining companies that might be listening? Since you are responsible or you do transformation, how can they go about doing transformation or implementing transformation in the mining space?
Sure. So the first thing I think that everybody needs to look at is some sort of sustainable approach. It doesn't work if you throw money at it. It doesn't work if you try and do something quickly. It doesn't work if you do something quickly just before the end of your financial year. You need to have a well-thought-out plan. And I think that's where the majority of companies, I'm saying in general, if you don't mind, that's where a lot lot of companies I feel are actually falling short because they're not planning ahead. So therefore, they're not spending the money on the right activities.
Mm-hmm.
They then wait until the end of the year. They then complain that they have to spend so much money on skills development mm-hmm. or enterprise and supply development.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if they actually do the activities sustainably that make business sense, it actually fits into the business plan, basically. I see there's a question. Do you want to just ask?
No,
or
it's
interrupt?
Not a question. It's just an addition.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I think we're looking at this as, and the question was put as, what can mining companies do?
Mm.
I would like to talk about it from the average South African and what they can do.
Okay.
We live in a phenomenal country mm-hmm. and our policies are pro BEE, they're pro black people participating in the mining industry
mm.
and they're pro transformation. What young black people need to do is look at opportunities within the mining industry.
Okay.
For example, and you work with this specific sector of the mining industry, mining companies have to obtain a certain percentage of their services from black-owned companies.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is an opportunity for not only community members, but for other young black people.
Okay.
And also, we talked about modernization and mechanization of the industry. That in itself is an opportunity. I have a friend of mine who's a surveyor and works at one of the big gold mines in this country,
mm-hmm.
and he knows that right now surveying is also becoming modernized and technology is taking over. So what he did, he then asked his company to send him on a course so he could learn how to read data of drones. So then he then bought himself a drone and he's now opened a consulting company and he now services mining companies who are looking at implementing drones, and he comes to the mines and he teaches the surveyors how to use those drones and how to take measurements. So as young black people as well, we also have to do the research. Look at what commodities are on the rise right now. What is driving that? We also have to educate ourselves and understand what are the drivers, what is changing, and how can I take that as an opportunity and make money as a black entrepreneur.
My goodness, can I take her back to the office?
No.
Please, I'll work with you.
No, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, my view around the whole point of sustainability is the fact that you can't just, you know, write out a check to some little business and say, here's some money, so we've done our enterprise development. But if that company is actually able to supply them with a service and that company has partnered with them on a long-term strategy, mm-hmm. that's actually something that's going to change the world. It's going to change our economy. It's going to create jobs. It's going to upskill people. And you're absolutely correct. They're going to then reach their targets of what they need to spend with those black-owned companies.
Yes.
So I think it really does need to be a combination then of the company supporting a black-owned business, but then also that black-owned business, you know, knocking on that corporate's door, knocking on that mining company's
absolutely.
Door and saying, I've got a solution for you. I've got a product that you need to buy.
Absolutely.
I'm black-owned. I'm running a legitimate business. I'm running a sustainable business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a far better solution.
And community members are first preference with regards to servicing of mining companies.
Yeah,
and then black females and black owned companies. And I think a lot of people, when they think of servicing mining companies, mm-hmm. they think big. They think mm-hmm. because the mining industry is known to be a capital intensive business and it's billions of rands. No, local community members where I used to work used to come to our mine and say, can I supply you with toilet paper? I mean, look at other industries. Look at Bidvest. Mm. They don't own any properties, but they are the largest service provider to property companies. Mm. And I think that's what young black people need to do is, the mine is here. What do they need? What can I go in and knock on the door and say, guys, do you need toilet paper? I can provide that for you.
Okay.
You can start small.
Okay. Marita?
I just want to make one comment around the conversation we're having. I think mining industry, if I had to give one tip to mining industry or one idea that I'd like to leave, or mention in the conversation, it would be around moving away from a one-line budget CSI, and it's no, you know, on the name of your magazine, but mining companies and industry think about CSI as a line budget, a line item in their financial statement.
Mm.
We need to move away from that into business mindset that says, how can we have inclusive growth strategies?
Mm.
How can we grow our mine that will grow our community, that will grow our country?
Mm. Yeah.
And if we can move from this tick box, one budget item, you know, spend thing in the financial statement to this is how we do business
mm-hmm.
and we're doing business for long-term sustainability and long-term inclusive economic growth
mm-hmm.
of our country and our community,
mm-hmm.
we will start to look at the problems and the services that we need differently. The community will start to engage with the mine differently. So the conversation changes from, I don't have budget for this, to this is how we do business. You know, and if we do business like this, we can have a far bigger impact, but also economically, you know, not only financially benefit our business, but economically the sustainability of the community and the country in which we operate.
You want to add something, Mr. Smear?
Yeah, I just want to add quickly. I mean, if you look, for instance, on this particular issue here, page 16, Pan-African Resources, they've just built a biggest retreatment plant in Evander, 1.6 billion rand. Since then, they've been, what they've done, they've got the chiefs and locally and the local communities. If you look on this particular issue, they actually doing the follow-up. There's a couple of companies that they, SMME, that they've developed. If you look, there's three of them here: Mamonkwe Holdings, Spofu Holdings, and Manana Clearing. If you look at the first one here, the guy started with two people. Now he employs 20 people. So that's it's a big thing for a company.
It
like
is,
that.
Yeah.
You move to the next one, they were just a director, now there's 13 people. So you're starting to make people do things for themselves. But these companies, they can, the next thing, they can go and do some work with Sasol, for instance.
Yeah.
This is a company within there. They become more sustainable than, you know, one writing a check, say, because there's just no jobs anymore. But people can start doing things for that, yeah.
I mean, quickly, Leanne, in terms of right now, we're speaking, I mean, Marita spoke of the benefit, and now Mr. Spear just mentioned some of the businesses that are already benefiting in terms of taking advantage of these opportunities. I know we're hosting something to help SMEs, you know, position themselves to benefit. Do you want to quickly tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So to all of your listeners out there who are listening to us today, we've actually joined together to do a joint event basically aimed at those small businesses. We've entitled it How to Benefit from BEE. So the aim of the session, which is being held on the 22nd of February, we've scheduled it 3 p.m. for 3:30 p.m. and it's roughly about 2 hours. And what we would like to cover is to basically explain to all of your listeners and all of the SMEs out there how they can benefit by knowing and understanding what the BEE legislation is actually saying. I find it very, you know, critically important to understand what your customers are, what your customers are looking for and their requirements to be able to service them better. So just those details again, it's the 22nd of February, 2018, of course, scheduled 3 o'clock for 3:30 p.m. In Randburg, in Ferndale. And if you would like to attend, please send us an email on info@econoserve, that's econoserve.co.za, or give us a call on 011-483-1190, or of course tweet either of us or send either of us an email if you've got our details. But we'd love to see you there, and hopefully, as we've been discussing, you'll realize that there are a lot of opportunities out there. There's a lot of funding out there, but most importantly, there's an opportunity to make some business, grow the economy, and obviously all of those things will help tremendously. So yeah, looking forward to seeing you all there.
No, it's a question of how can they position themselves to actually take advantage of those opportunities. I mean, Mr. Svia, you also spoke briefly earlier about how can, you know, these SMEs, you know, go about positioning themselves to access those opportunities. But now how can corporate access these SMEs? Because half of the time I've realized, even with the problem that with some of the clients that they deal with, they said, where are black businesses? They don't find them.
It is a good point, and I mean, mining is a very, very difficult industry to be in. Hence, when those guys, they do the work, they expect someone to be able to deliver. They don't have time to go and teach you around how to do things. The opportunities are there, as I mentioned. We also, from the mining CSI, and I'm going to make an offer right here to some of your guests here. some of the business, like SMME, small business, they've come to us and said, listen, we want to get into mining, but we can't afford to advertise on your magazine and all of that. We've said, listen, we'll do that for you for free. And on a couple of issues, we have done that, and some of them have managed to get some contracts from the mining and all of that. So if some of these businesses would like to do that, and some of them can even profile them, we'll do that for free. They'll maybe have to pay for the design of the page or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of our SMME development or promoting. The corporates, most of the mining companies, it becomes difficult for them to be able to take someone who said, "Bona, I can do this and that." But if they see them in here, it becomes easier because we have a good relationship with the Chamber of Mines. We have a good relationship with most of the CEOs. As you can see on the back page, you got all the mining companies there. So we have that. So they have managed to successfully get some of the projects. And some of them, they come to us and say, listen, thank you very much. In future, we're going to pay in full because you've got access. But on our website as well, this is also online, this version. And then we, I would like to say, we're offering that to some of the SMMEs that want to get into mining, and then they feel they just are not able to access it.
Yeah. Okay, so then how many prints do you do? Is it a monthly, quarterly?
It's a bi-monthly. We print. We used to print about 10,000 going with the mining Glen Engineering News, but because of the postage, there was an issue there, so we've come down to about 5,000.
Okay.
But all of these,
where are you distributing that?
They distributed it to Mining Indaba, Junior Indaba, DMR, Chamber of Mines, and all the mining companies, they get 100 copies because they're able to give this to their communities or the projects that they have done. Universal Coal, they went as far as to say, listen, we'll do that, but we also want you to print a single page with our projects, which we print about maybe about 100 copies to 1,000 of those. They give to community. That's made a huge difference for them. Because communities now, they know they can work with them. They can showcase themselves, whether they got bursaries, whether they got houses built for them, whether they've got the SMME development. So, and the mayors have actually, the mayor of Delmas, to be precise, she's got a very good relationship with Mbuyelo Coal and Universal Coal because of the relationship they've built with communities. And we're heading to Bakersfort to do the same thing. The municipality there has asked us to assist. And then and other different, we'll also be heading to the Northern Cape for Vedanta.
Okay.
They want to build houses. So, and then people, they can access the magazine online as well, www.miningcsi. But if they want printed copies, they can just get hold of us. We can email it to them.
Yeah.
Info at Mining CSI, yeah.
No, definitely. I like that. Marita, quickly, let's talk the mining charter, which has not been adopted as yet. I mean, what are some of the challenges of regulation and compliance? I mean, should the charter be adopted?
I think one of the starting challenges is the ring-fenced elements within the mining charter. One of the, you know, one of the big changes from the old mining charter to the new mining charter that is now under review is the three ring-fenced elements, which is ownership, employment equity, and community development. Now, in all the studies that's been done to date around the effectiveness or the ability of mining industry to implement across the transformation indicators, ownership has caused a lot of debate, you know, and that's moving from 26 to 30%, and it's the flow-through principles and once empowered, always empowered. You know, that conversation is a very big issue for mining industry and a challenge around implementation. The second one is the as I said, the three ring fence elements is the fact if you don't make your community development, if you don't implement the community development you committed to do, you will be non-compliant immediately. Now, the implementation of the community development, as Moses has alluded to, is one of the key challenges for the mining industry. Even though there is budget, most often there's budget available, there's challenges around the implementation thereof because of the broad number of stakeholders that must be involved in the community development. It's local government, local communities, traditional authorities. You know, there's a range of issues that sometimes can stall the implementation of those projects.
Yeah.
So I think that could be a challenge.
Yeah, I know, I mean, social responsibility is growing, I mean, in the mining space as a whole. I mean, what are some of the social responsibility initiatives that are out there for mining or within mining companies that you might know of?
The key focus areas at the moment remain for mining industry around infrastructure development. You know, there's a requirement from a regulatory point of view to do poverty alleviation or income generating projects as well as infrastructure development projects. And most often, because the mining industry's social spend or community development spend is closely linked to the IDP, the Integrated Development Plan of the local municipality, it often goes into infrastructure. We just got a lesser impact on the community or the ability of the community to earn income. You know, it's roads, it's water, it's things like that that's most often pressing from a local municipality point of view.
Okay. Noluthando, just a quick one. Right now, you're working for an asset company. Asset management company. Next week, it's mining in Daba.
Yes.
I'm an investor. I want to invest. So now let's talk. What should I look forward to this year's Indaba?
I think the Indaba this year is definitely going to address the key topics of conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, one of the key topics is the fact of is the term of inclusive growth.
Okay.
And how are mining companies working towards inclusive growth and what has been done and what is still to be done. There's also going to be a lot of talk around what we've just discussed, which is technology and modernization,
mm-hmm.
which I think is quite important for people to listen into and hone in on, because I think, you know, where some people see crisis that technology and modernization might take over jobs, others will see opportunity and upskill themselves to be able to take advantage of that. So it's important to hone in on that. With regards to investment, I definitely think, again, it goes back to the education and opening your eyes and reading and keeping informed. You have to know what is currently driving the world. You have to look at what is GDP growth. You have to look at China, which is like the largest consumer of our commodities. Which commodities are they consuming? Are they still in a large infrastructure build phase? And we also, there's obviously the topic of electric vehicles. What commodities do those consume? So you look at companies that are operating within the copper, cobalt, lithium, mm-hmm. nickel aspect. And you look at the mining companies that are heavily invested into those minerals. What are the minerals of the future? What does the future require? And which companies operating in that realm? And once you know those companies, you'll make the correct investment decision.
I like you. Quickly, opinion on the charter?
Gosh, there definitely are many, many good aspects to the charter.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, this country is a country that which has a horrible history of leaving people out of the economy and economic growth. And I think it's important that we focus on that. This charter is about inclusive growth. However, you cannot put terms and conditions which one cannot meet in a specific period. I think the review is correct. And I think what the most important thing about the charter is that there wasn't a great conversation between all the stakeholders. I think everyone needs to come back to the table and say, what can we do, what can't we do, and how can we make this work for inclusive growth going forward?
Quickly, social media following?
I'm not on Twitter. I don't know why. But Instagram, Miss_T_Zulu.
Okay. You wanted to say something, Mirata?
I wanted to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
Please, go ahead.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, please, go ahead.
I want to know, as an asset manager and where you provide guidance to investment to large companies,
yes.
is what role does social license risk play in your advice that you give? Do you look at the risk of social license to operate within the assets sector, within the mining sector?
Absolutely.
And how do you qualify that risk?
So we have, I know with the entity that I am currently with, we have a large ESG team. And so the social aspect of all the governance of how the company operates is quite critical. And when we do evaluation of companies, that actually is one of the key things that we look at. So, yes, we do take it into consideration.
So, Marita, for people that want to get hold of you after this, where can they get hold of you?
My email address is probably the best place.
Yes.
I'm not very fast on Twitter. I've got LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn profile.
Oh, yeah. LinkedIn is so good, right?
LinkedIn is easy to get hold of me, but my email address, Marita, MARITHA,
okay.
at mtsholdings.co.za.
Okay. Are you guys going to the Indaba?
Yes. I'm not going.
Yes.
I'm the only person not going in this team. Like, really, guys?
So you guys are going?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I might see you guys in Cape Town, eh?
No, I think I'll just come now.
You better
come. I can't be the one who's left out.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Just remember to bring your own water.
Oh, yes. We'll bring these water bottles.
Yeah, no, definitely. So quickly, people that want to follow Econo?
We're on Twitter at... My Twitter handle is EconoServeLee, or just simply EconoServe, or visit our website www.econoserve.co.za. No E on the end.
No, definitely.
Sorry, just for those who want to do get in touch on a professional basis, Nolutando Zulu on LinkedIn. That would be the best place to converse further about this.
Oh, okay. No, definitely. Thank you, guys. This conversation is not over. We're just running out of time. But we're going to definitely bring you in next time, and let's get more into what you're doing next time. But more than anything, thank you for your time today and the contribution that you've brought.
Thank you
for having us. Thank you. Definitely. This is what we had for you today on 360 Biz, discussing all things mining, in fact, transformation into the mining space. Because others, we hear they speak of transformation, but we don't get to see this transformation. This is definitely something we want to see within communities and various communities. Ladies and gentlemen, catch us again next time for another exciting installment of 360 Biz. My name is Tebogo Mafodi. We out.
This is CliffCentral.com.